welcome to the Leader of the Band show. I'm Bill Zortman, and the leader of the band, Scott Lawrence, yes, that's Scott Lawrence, who heads up the Greater Sioux Falls Chamber, is here sharing his insights. I try to get him to share the most inside information I can, but he brings together these very informative but very protective guests. Scott Lawrence, good morning to you.
Good morning, Maestro Zortman. How you doing?
Well, we've got the phone ringing already.
I know. Gosh, they're after me. So I'm trying to hide here, but we've got a great show lined up today. You know, try to bring information to our listeners on the Leader of the Band show, and it's good to be back with you in the studio.
A
month ago, I was flying solo with Norm, but it's good to be back together. And probably, oh, no, we'll be together before Sioux Falls Day at the Legislature.
That's right.
We'll be together before that, but then we'll be up there. So we've got President Yose Marie Griffiths. Got some great information coming from Dakota State. We're going to talk to Brooke Hendricks about the Sioux Empire Livestock Show. We're going to bring in Walt Bones to talk about a group he's a part of, Protecting South Dakota's Ag Future. And then we'll finish up with Sadaho, Tim Rave. So it's a good group. But first, we've got the one, the only President Yose Marie Griffiths in the studio with
Isn't
us.
Isn't she an amazing woman?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, there's every day there's something new. I see her and she'll say, we've got, well, something came up. So it's good to have her in the studio with us. Good morning, Dr. Griffiths.
Good morning. Thank you again for inviting me.
Sure, it's good to have you. You know, there's all this discussion about the price of higher ed and the value of a degree. A person in your position would definitely want to make affordable education available, especially in careers that, I mean, sought after, like cyber. So tell us a little bit. You got some new rankings. So I think we should share those.
Okay. Thanks, Scott and Bill. Yes, we got some new rankings at the end of December from an organization called cybersecurityguide.org. They gave us the number two most affordable online cybersecurity degree, PhD degree in the country, the number four most affordable online bachelor's degree, and the number 12 most affordable on-campus bachelor's degree in cybersecurity. And those are excellent because we know our cybersecurity programs are outstanding because we have those designations, Center of Academic Excellence designations from the National Security Agency and Homeland Security. And those, by the way, have just been renewed for 5 years each.
Good.
So we've got the quality, but now we've got evidence of the affordability. And I put that down to a number of things that have been done here in the state, and I want to give credit to that. We've had a tuition freeze for a number of years, 3 years, I believe.
And it's in discussion in the legislature again for another year, right?
Yes, it is. So that helps. Right, when you can say we have a tuition freeze. The second factor I think that contributes to those rankings is we've expanded Dakota Advantage. Dakota Advantage is a program whereby students from certain states, we started off with neighboring states, can come for in-state tuition. So last year we expanded that to Montana, Wisconsin, and Illinois, and now we're going to expand it again to Kansas and Missouri. So students from those states are now coming to South Dakota and for cybersecurity to DSU.
So Dakota Advantage, how many states are we in with that program now? Sorry I asked that.
However many
she's
we
counting
have
with her fingers.
Nine, yeah. About 11. About
11.
Or so,
okay.
Yes.
All right. Yes,
then,
that'll help.
Then the other thing was the availability of scholarships. So now we've got the Freedom Scholarships, and we've also, as institutions, we have other scholarships available. So we've all seen increasing scholarship dollars for students, so that also helps attract students and get them through in an affordable way. And then the fourth factor really is marketing. People can't come here unless they know we exist, they know what our programs are, how good they are, they know about Dakota Advantage, they know about the fact that we've had tuition freezes. So I think all of those factors together contribute to these new rankings that we've just received in cybersecurity.
That's a big deal.
It is a big deal. It is a big deal.
Well, it's a big deal because we've talked many times about the fact that your students are very sought after. You know, all of your degrees, but this mm-hmm. cyber degree, I mean, how many job openings are there?
Over 700,000 in the United States.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and we want to keep them here, so you've got plans to keep them here, and we could get into that, but That's congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And how did that equate to enrollment at Dakota State? How is that looking for you?
Well, our enrollment in the last fall was very, very good. We were up 8-9%, which is amazing. I hesitate to look behind me to say, gosh, you know, it's unlikely we'll repeat. But a part of that was the new program we have for paraprofessionals in the K-12 school system who are able now to teacher apprenticeship pathway programs. Mm-hmm. We have the elementary and special education program, and Northern State has one for secondary education. But we got an influx of students from that, which helped boost our numbers for the fall. But actually, in our Beacom College of Computer and Cyber Sciences, we had a more than 3% increase, which compared with the rest of the country where everyone is seeing enrollments go down, was actually a very, very healthy enrollment growth for us.
Great, great. Now, to switch topics just a little bit, if that's okay with you, President Griffiths and Maestro.
It's fine with me.
I believe that the governor, in her budget address, discussed, you know, she always talking about the next big thing and cyber and our new facility, the Dakota Applied Research Corporation, that will be in partnership with Dakota State and in Sioux Falls. Was the next big thing. But there's another big thing that I believe she mentioned in her budget address, and I believe that was a $6 million funding for quantum.
Yes.
Quickly, just give us a brief description of what quantum computing is and what would this $6 million go for.
Okay, quantum computing is the new technology that's going to underlie computation at the high end going forward. So it's not like the computers that we have now. It operates in a different way, taking advantage of subatomic elements in physics. What it does is it significantly increases the speed with which you can compute. So if you think about artificial intelligence applications, you need a lot of compute cycles, and quantum computing will be allowed to do that. But the other thing that quantum computing does, it works, it's so powerful that it actually can begin to break encryption mechanisms. So all the data that we have stored in computers right now in this country, classified data, sensitive data, confidential data, information about people, their health, their finances, etc., is all vulnerable to attack by bad actors who have access to quantum computing. So we are particularly concerned from a cybersecurity perspective, as well as from how can we harness this new technology for the future? How can we educate ourselves so that we can begin to educate some in the workforce to actually take jobs in this new quantum environment? And we also need to engage in some preliminary research. So the proposal is actually for the four research institutions in the state, South Dakota State, the University of South Dakota School, South Dakota Mines, and Dakota State University to work together to create a center, not a physical center, a virtual center, where we will have faculty and graduate students learning about the quantum capabilities, learning how to leverage and learning how to program them, learning how to protect from them and them. And we would be doing this over the next 3 to 4 years through this center. The other benefit of working together and starting to do this exploratory work, both on the educational side and the research side, is that federal dollars are going to start coming forward through the CHIPS Act. And if we've got some expertise and experience, we'll be better positioned as a state to gain some of those federal dollars to do the kinds of research that are going to be needed.
Is quantum computing happening now? Or is it kind of in the beta stages?
It's happening, but it's not really commercially available at a cost that's reasonable. It's always going to be very expensive because this is for the big, complex problem solving. But we can have access right now to simulators which behave and will tell us how programs can be built, give us some experience. Some of the simulators are free at no charge. And then if you want to do a lot of computation, you start having to pay according to what you want to do. But it's available now. In 2018 was when the White House first issued a statement on developing a quantum workforce in the United States. And they heavily talked about needing to expand the range of academic higher education institutions that were involved. I mean, typically you see the big names, and now they're talking about the next tier down. And we have four research to institutions in South Dakota that could definitely play a role. We have different interests, clearly, in terms of the applications we'd work, but we could leverage our expertise across institutions through a single center rather than compete with each other.
That just makes way too much sense, doesn't it?
I know, and we're just South Dakota farm boys.
Well, you know, getting out in front of the quantum situation is something that I think is important to us all. I applaud you for kind of getting that going. But, you know, it's really great to see four of our research institutions working together, too. I think that's what we have to do.
Isn't that a nice feel?
Yeah, isn't that what we do in South Dakota? You're always talking about working together. So, Bill, anything to close with President Griffiths?
You were telling me that my old friends at Mississippi State were number one in one of the categories. Tell me about that.
Yes, I did. I thought you might ask the question, well, if you're number two, who's number one?
Yeah.
So I did look it up, and it's Mississippi State. Mississippi State has those three Center of Academic Excellence designations, so quality is there. I do have to say, I think they have the climate to attract people
down
there a little bit.
Especially on days like we've had lately.
Exactly.
Oh, these poor kids. But, yeah, there's, I believe, Dakota State has three of the top security designations, and there's, what, nine institutions in the country?
Ten total.
So. Ten total that have those. So, you know, we've got something going on in here with all our regental system in South Dakota, but there's a lot cooking up at Dakota State University. And next time President Griffith's in, she'll give us an update on the Dakota Applied Research Corporation.
So she doesn't need an invite. She can come in anytime.
Anytime, yeah, yeah. Thanks for being with us this morning, President Griffiths, and always a pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much, and stay warm.
All right, you too.
We've got a big show coming up, the Sioux Empire Livestock Show. We'll talk next. Welcome back to the Leader of the Band Show. And
yes, welcome back.
We've gone from President Griffiths to a lady that's got a big livestock show coming.
Well, you know, agriculture is the number one industry in South Dakota. And we have the agribusiness manager of the Sioux Falls Chamber of Commerce, which, you know,
that's
you always ask.
Deal.
It's a big deal. Absolutely. And agribusiness is a major pillar of the Sioux Falls Chamber. And Brooke Hendricks is with us. Agribusiness manager. Good morning, Brooke. How you doing?
Good morning, Scott. Good morning, Bill. Thanks for having me this morning. I can tell you I'm a few degrees warmer than I have been over the weekend, so I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, tomorrow it's going to be like 5 or 6 degrees. It'll be a heat wave.
It is going to be a heat wave. I don't even need my heat in the morning.
Well, I was kind of looking. The livestock show commences next week. And I was kind of looking at the weather forecast, and it looks like it's going to be very favorable for us.
That's what I've heard. I've gotten a lot of emails yesterday that said the weather's going to turn, it's going to be great, and that's what I'm banking on because I have this weird superstition that if I look at the weather, it's going to turn, so I'm just not even going to look at it.
Well, Brooke, you've been busy. You know, I see you down at the chamber office, you know, several times a week, but you haven't really been there because I know you've been out busy getting prepared for this show. Just give us a little overview of the Sioux Empire Livestock Show.
Yeah, so next week on the 23rd through the 28th, we'll be entering into the 71st annual Sioux Empire Livestock Show. And that's, you know, I think a feat in itself for being over 70 years and approaching the 75th in just a couple. But over the last few months, myself, key volunteers, and members of the other, you know, the chamber staff go out and they talk to businesses that we want to be a part of, you know, the show to help exhibitors at our Sale of Champions, vendors that we want to come back that livestock exhibitors really like having. It's kind of a next place that they buy their next either piece of equipment, something else that they can use to maybe make their operation at home a lot better. And so we kind of go out and get all those things together. And then my favorite part is going out and getting all the prizes for the contest and working with those that I see as key representatives within the show industry of the livestock and agriculture in that world, and, you know, having them design banners and their creativeness that they can bring to our show and just kind of elevate it just another step. It's always a cold week in January, but anything we can do to bring the heat a little bit more for those exhibitors is something that comes in and is always a favorite part of my prep for the week.
So when you're mentioning exhibitors,
mm-hmm.
are you referring to the folks that will be exhibiting livestock, or are you referring to the other exhibitors in the trade show?
You know, I'm to both, honestly. You know, so I go out and I get some exhibitors for that trade show that Scott mentioned. That's on Wednesday and Thursday of the week. So I encourage you all to come down and check out that. We have, you know, agriculture vendors. We have even some boutiques and some little shops. And then we even have some other companies, banks that come out. I hear that Lawrence and Schiller will be there. So if you want to talk to them.
Lawrence and who?
Lawrence and Schiller.
Yeah. Well, we'll be there.
If you need, you know, better talk to them. If you got anything prepared you want to get created, I think they're the right creative minds to do that. I've seen some of their work. It's pretty good. And then, yeah, we have our livestock exhibitors that come. You know, we have youth livestock exhibitors, and those are kids that probably age in the range about 8 to 21 years old, and they truly come from across the country. And I mean it when I say that. I have calls from, you know, steers that are coming up from Texas. We have kids bringing pigs over from the Indiana, Illinois area, and we have people that are coming over, you know, from far as Utah that come across, hit the National Western Stock Show in Denver, and then they come on down to Sioux Falls before they make the loop back, you know, out west. And so it's really incredible experience that all these exhibitors want to come to Sioux Falls. But more importantly, we have our purebred cattle that come in and consign on that Wednesday, and it's incredible that the amount of cattle we have in this region, the quality of cattle that we have in this region that still come, have been coming for years, and they still come making a priority to consign cattle here in Sioux Falls. And I think it just adds to the historical mark that we have here.
That's, you know, it's a pretty remarkable event. So the Wednesday and Thursday Ag Show, is that in the convention center? Help me out here. Where do people go and, you know, how do they participate and all that stuff?
Yeah, so if you're coming out to the Sioux Empire Livestock Show, we're housed completely at the WH Lion Fairgrounds at the Expo Building. I tell people that come, that's the easiest exit to get to is you're going to take 12th Street, and you're going to turn between the Billion dealership and the Taco Bell, drive right in. We're the big building at the south end of the fairgrounds. You really can't miss it because there's a lot of trailers that'll be parked in. So if you go any farther north and you see campers, you might have gone a little too far.
You know, Brooke, one thing that I'm always intrigued about is that the people that come to these shows with their animals will go to three shows. They'll go to Dallas, they'll go to Denver, go to Sioux Falls. And when you start hearing those stories that we're one of the three they pick, and you got Dallas and Denver or something of that size that they're going to, we should feel really good about what we're hearing.
Yeah, I think we can hear in Sioux Falls and the surrounding community can feel real good about, you know, exhibitors and consigners and even buyers that come out and businesses in Sioux Falls that, you know, individuals want to come to Sioux Falls. This has an estimated economic impact of over $3 million for the city. And so, you know, combine that with the state being the state, you know, agriculture is the largest industry in the state. That's such a historical and a great representation of why everyone wants to come here. But I think truly is it's the people in the community what really bring you there. I've gone to stock shows across the country, and there are cities that I really don't want to go back to. But you come to Sioux Falls, and it's the community that's here. It's businesses that are here, and everyone is so welcoming. And the fact that there might be families that come from rural areas like I do where you might got to go somewhere for a while before you need to get to the good stores you want to go to. So they can come and do some shopping while they're here. Some of them, you know, unique thing that I talked about with some other people that I know that show livestock is they use this as a vacation. You know, this takes place during the week. Kids still have school, but, you know, some of them will use this as a vacation. They'll take the front half and they'll go to Sioux Falls here. You know, they'll come here, then they'll go out to Rapid City for the Black Hills Stock Show. Or, you know, the front of the week, they might be in Denver. They're on their way home and they'll come to Sioux Falls, wrap up their vacation, maybe for the early winter before they start all the spring shows. And I think that's just a really cool aspect that we need to really take advantage of, that people want to come to Sioux Falls and they want to come to South Dakota.
Here's the other thing that I always like to mention, and that is if they've come to town, we need to make them feel they're welcome here. And if they get to see being welcomed, they're going to tell their friends. They're going to say, that Sioux Falls was good. They cared enough to do it.
Well, the discussions I had with the exhibitors, you know, last year when I just walked around the pens and talked the night of the sale of the mayor's
roundup,
they all were having a ball. They were talking about, we were out at the mall this afternoon and we were doing this and we get to go out to eat afterwards. And, you know, They're having fun. They're having fun. And I think the people of Sioux Falls always roll out the red carpet. I just think that's the way Terry Schmidt talks about it with Quail and Pheasant Fest coming up. You know, that's how we do it. That's why we're America's best little city, right? Okay, Brooke, tell me, on Tuesday, we cut the ribbon. Tuesday, people are moving into the expo building.
Yep. So actually, our move-in starts on Monday.
Monday.
We have some purebred cattle that'll move in on Monday. They're allowed to be there that afternoon, so they're the first ones that get a peek at the building. They also might be the first ones to tell me something's wrong with how
right.
we set something up.
Yeah.
But that's okay, because we have time to readjust. Tuesday, we cut the ribbon at 4:30 p.m. at the expo building, and then at 6 o'clock, we have our first show of the week. That's going to be our 4-H and FFA calf show, and that encompasses kids really, you know, from Minnehaha County, Lincoln County, counties, you know, within the tri-state area, that are close. But it's truly any individual who's in 4-H or FFA that can come in. And we have probably about 130 entries for that show so far. So we're doing really good, especially on that one. And then the rest of the week, we have a bunch of livestock shows that you can come out and join.
Wednesday, our shows, right?
Wednesday in the morning, we have our purebred cattle shows in the morning, and at 1 p.m. we start our sales. So if you want to see some really high-quality animals and you want to see what they bring, 1 o'clock would be the time to get there.
And I think people can just kind of come out, right?
Yeah. It's a free event. You can come out and whenever you want. I recommend coming out on Thursday, although Thursday is going to be our busiest day. Thursday, you're going to see some steers that are going to be shown. You're going to see pigs shown, sheep and goats shown. And that's probably the best day after all of those exhibitors are done, that you'll be able to interact with them, ask them some questions, because the kids really truly like talking about what they do, because for some of them, it might be their sport. Some of them might play sports and show livestock, but showing livestock is a different way of life, and they truly love every aspect of it, and so they'll tell you everything about it.
We moved our Sioux Falls Chamber Board of Directors meeting next Wednesday. We're meeting out at the expo building.
Wow.
And then we're going to get a tour of the building, and then we're going to be around for that 1 o'clock kickoff to that the purebred cattle show.
The sales, yep.
The sales,
yeah,
at 1 o'clock. There's so many things I get confused.
I know, it's okay. Yeah, we'll show them all in the morning, so we'll get a sale order. But yeah, like Scott said, the Chamber Board of Directors will come out. They'll have their meeting. They'll get a tour with us, and then at 1 o'clock, they're going to see the kickoff of our Angus sale. And so the Angus is probably our highest breed in numbers that we have there. And there's some consigners that come year after year. And I'll tell you, Scott, maybe you should bring your checkbook.
Well, I brought it last year.
Did you use it?
Yes, I did. See, I'm an old... I always showed sheep. I showed sheep at the Sioux
Fair. We raised sheep, so...
When I was in fifth and sixth grade. So, you know, it's fun. I bought a lamb last year, so, you know, it was fun. And we bought a lamb. I think Lawrence and Schiller bought the lamb, actually, so... it's fun, you know, and Brooke, I've told the story many times of one of the winners in the swine category with the market. I forget the category, market something, but you'll probably remember the girl, I think, had to go to another school activity that was her animal, but her little sister was probably, what, all of 3 or 4?
I have to say she was probably about 3.
She was all decked out with her boots and her buckle and her hat, and she handled that hog.
Yeah, that's kind of the cool thing. I think that was a favorite of last year, you know. Not many 3-year-olds that can handle a pig that, you know, is almost as high as they are.
All right. Well, hey, Brooke, thanks for coming in this morning. I understand you're going to go a little deeper with Bill in the second hour.
Next hour.
Yes,
that's right.
And,
yes, I am.
I just want to make sure people understand that next Wednesday through Saturday, right? It's, you know, come on out. See what's going on. It's a great event, and I think it really showcases who we are as a city. It showcases agriculture. It's a great event. So, Brooke, thanks for all your hard work and getting that set up. Thanks for coming in this morning. And stay tuned for another episode in the second hour.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Leader of the Band Show. Scott Lawrence is not the only leader of the Greater Sioux Falls Chamber of Commerce, but a 1-hour-long show this morning. We get to talk to a lot of folks that are plugged into what the Chamber's doing. We got this ag guy. What do you want to do with him?
Well, I Walt Bones, former Secretary of Ag, great livestock producer, great South Dakotan, a leader in agriculture. He's no stranger to your show, Bill. You've had him in. You guys are friends. You've been together many times. But I asked Walt to come in this morning because I wanted to talk to him a little bit about an organization that's a coalition that's been put together called Protect South Dakota's Ag Future, of which Walt is the chairman of the board of directors. Walt, tell us a little bit about Protect South Dakota's Ag's Future.
Well, thank you, Scott. Thanks to be here. Bill, nice to see you again.
You bet.
Happy New Year. I think it's the first time this year.
Yeah.
So, we are a group that it was put together to make sure that people can hear both sides of the issue. And the obvious issue here is carbon capture. It's a pipeline, a proposed pipeline project. It's a proposed billion-dollar ethanol plant up in the Lake Preston area. But it comes down to the future viability of our ethanol industry, in my mind. We are in a world, if you believe it or not, if you support it or not, but there are people that are – there's a market out there for a low-carbon, high-value ethanol fuel. And primarily that market is for the sustainable aviation fuel.
Right.
Airplanes, they say, are not going to run on batteries.
No.
No.
No. Oh, we're low on charge. We better
find a place to put her down.
Yeah.
Yeah, or else start the generator, one of the others.
Right.
So there is an emerging market that is right now in the United States, we produce about 9 billion gallons of ethanol.
Okay.
Just the domestic airline industry to meet their goals of decarbonization, which involves a high percentage of ethanol into their jet fuel, that market is 30 billion gallons a year.
30
versus the 9 that we already produce. And so there is a market out there just screaming for us to do something. A number of the ethanol plants have already responded to this market in ways that they can. We, unfortunately, our ethanol plants here in South Dakota do not have the geology available to where we can the common way to get rid of this right now is to put it down into an old oil well.
Okay.
Down
sequester it
2 miles
yep.
away and then just cap it off and leave it there. And so, unfortunately, our ethanol plants here in South Dakota do not have that opportunity. We don't have, again, the geology to do that.
Okay.
So, the few years ago, the pipeline, there was a couple different ones. Obviously, the Navigator and the Summit Carbon Solutions came into South Dakota and say, hey, you know, we're going to try to put together a multi-state. We're going to pull from Minnesota. We're going to pull from Iowa. We're going to go through South Dakota. We're going to get some North Dakota ones. And we're going to put this, liquefy this stuff coming from the ethanol plants, put it into a pipeline, and ship it up into North Dakota and dump it into a hole. And by doing that, that would lower our carbon score on our ethanol almost in half, which would then put us in a position to capitalize on this emerging market.
And I think you made an interesting statement early on. And thank you for that, Walt. Whether you believe it or not, global warming and all, whether you believe it or not, you just as well believe it because it's coming, right? It's happening.
Well, again, believe it or not, I mean, there was a poll down in Iowa. 80% of the farmers in Iowa do not think that climate change is caused by man. And I was asked to comment on that some folks out in California. And I said, I'm with it. I thank God every day for climate change or else I'd be trying to grow corn on a glacier, you know, that we had coming right here that was 150 feet thick here at Sioux Falls. So, but yeah, believe it or not, there's people out there, there's industries out there that are demanding this. And again, our ethanol industry would be kind of locked into a situation where if we maintain the status quo, and there's a few little things that they can do, but if we maintain the status quo, we would have to try to market a high carbon, low value ethanol, which again in the marketplace is not going to be as valuable. And so where does the difference come from? Well, it comes from probably the corn price. You know, to be competitive for those ethanol plants to stay open, you know, the chances are they're going to have to probably lower their corn price to stay competitive. And again, our generation, I feel really good about, you know, we were part of this whole ethanol evolution.
Boom. Yes, right.
You know? And
right.
And so I've got three nephews that farm with us. You know, that's the future. That's the fifth generation in our operation. And so this is their market, you know, for the future in my mind.
So if this, I know Gevo said no pipeline, no plant. Okay. Is that a true statement or a false statement?
Well, they would be in a lot better position if we had a pipeline than if we didn't.
Okay.
I haven't heard if they're going yet or not, but I know, you know, there's already a pipeline in Nebraska, and I know that they're looking at sites in Nebraska.
Okay.
$1 billion investment,
yes,
in South Dakota.
Yeah, not to mention the after effects of the tax gains to the counties and all those things, right? I think I've got I've got the brochure here, but it just says the income annual property taxes generated by this venture, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Beetle
over
County,
$12 million
yeah,
a year total, yeah.
Yeah, that's in just annual property taxes. But you know, you said your three nephews, if we can't do the low carbon fuels, that's going to reduce their corn price, which has a cascading effect on everything, correct?
Oh, you know, the old saying is if you give a farmer a dollar, he's going to spend two. So
or 50 cents.
Well, no, usually you give them a buck, they're going to spend two. So, no, it does get to the local communities. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think? What's the next step with this venture? Where are you at and what's going on?
Well, we're trying to make this a win for South Dakota. And Bill and I have talked about this numerous times.
Oh, yeah, he's had,
you know,
many.
About,
many.
You know,
I get to talk both sides, and they say, we like it with you being even-handed.
And that's great. And that's your role, frankly.
Yes.
And so we just don't think saying no is the answer. And so we're trying to find, one, raise the awareness. You know, legislators, I truly believe that 95% of legislators in Pierre are trying to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're there for the good of the state. They really are. And so if they're only hearing one side of an issue, they probably think that's the only side of the issue then. And so it's been our group's mission, so to speak, is to make sure that those legislators have both sides of the issue available to them, and then let them make their choice. Again, an uneducated legislator, well-intentioned, sometimes the consequences are, there's some unintended consequences that come along with
Absolutely.
Those good intentions. And so again, that's been our whole focus. And so it's been our goal, again, to go out and bring in coalition members. You know, when you get to peer, obviously, you know, numbers and when you talk to a legislator and say, well, here's the people that, you know, kind of are thinking our way. So that's been our goal is to try to get some coalition members together, educate the public. We've had some TV ads out. I don't know if you were watching the South Dakota State Jacks game,
yep.
You know,
mm-hmm.
You know, there was a really nice ad, TV ad on there. We've got a second one coming out here shortly. So, you know, that's been the goal, Scott, is to just raise the awareness, make sure that everybody has the information at hand so they can make a good decision.
That's excellent. You know, it's an interesting topic. It's been a hot topic. But
misunderstood.
You know, misunderstood.
On both sides.
You know, we did a poll. I saw a poll about, you know, are you pro, for, or against carbon pipelines, and 52% of the people said we don't have enough information to make a decision. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So this is an effort to get information out. I would assume this will require some trips to Pierre for you.
Yeah. I had an opportunity to go out there this afternoon, but I'm meeting with a group of two, and they wanted me at, they're out there at four, and our farm, Bones Farm corporate jet was busy today, so I couldn't get out there.
Yeah. What's your, the Bones Farm corporate jet, you know, 2008 Suburban, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Probably. Yeah. Four-wheel drive pickup with a cow pumper on the front.
Yeah. No. So if somebody's interested in the coalition or being a member of this coalition or finding out more, Walt, who would they contact? How would they contact you?
Well, you know, the easiest way, of course, is just to go on a website, and it's protectsouthdakotaag.com. protectsdag.com, and there's an opportunity if you want to become a coalition member. It doesn't cost anything. You know, there's going to be some opportunities to go to peer, as you said, Scott. There's going to be some opportunities for folks to you know, maybe have a written or even a visual testimonial, you know, that we could pass on. So yeah, if you want your voice heard, we would love to have you go and sign up.
Well, I do know that the legislators listen. They appreciate their constituents and those from around the state speaking up. They really appreciate that. They've told me that many times. So I believe, are you going to have Walt back second
Walt's
hour?
Walt's going to be back.
Okay, you can dig deeper into this if you so desire. But
I'm not sure we're going to dig in.
Walt, thanks for coming in today.
Walt and I never do.
Yeah, hey, thanks for
we
all
just
you,
wing it. Thank you, Scott.
Thanks for all you do for South Dakota.
Thank you.
You know, we appreciate that. I think the jet's waiting at the airport. So.
Welcome back to the monthly Leader of the Band show. Scott Lawrence is in his spare time. He talks to all these people. He's got the chamber. He's got all the band activities that he does.
Yeah.
But who have you got for our anchor man?
Well, we've had a heck of a show, but our anchor man is a good friend of mine also a former Senate Majority Leader, House Majority Leader, among other things in the legislature, but now is president and CEO of an organization called Sadaho, and that would be Tim Rave. Tim, welcome to the show this morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good, good. First of all, Tim, I said, you know, my promo ad said, Tim Rave and all things Sadaho. I said, people are asking me, what's Sadaho? So tell us what Sadaho is, would you please?
Yeah, you bet. So Sadaho is the South Dakota Association of Healthcare Organizations, and really it's an umbrella title because we're just like we're a member organization. You know, members pay dues, and then I'll tell you a little bit about what we do for them because they pay those dues. But we represent all 54 nonprofit hospitals in the state. They're all dues-paying members. We also represent 46 long-term care facilities in the state, as well as hospice, home health, and assisted living. And so we have a broad umbrella of healthcare-related groups that we represent. And I spend every legislative session, so the pay is better. I used to get $6,000 a year to be out here in the legislature, so I make a little bit more than that now, fortunately. But I spend every session out here every day because healthcare is just a big, big topic, right? Big animal. And so there's a lot of bills touch healthcare. Last year, we tracked 104, I believe, bills. There was probably 55 or 60 of them that we were really concerned about, either as proponents or opponents. And I think that number is going to go up significantly this year. They're expecting a record number of bills. That always happens. There's always more bills generally in the second year of first term of legislators. We had a record number of new legislators this year, and so that probably will translate to a large number of bills. We had 140 bills dropped before we ever got here. I've never seen that in the 2 years I've been around this process. And I heard rumors that there's over 600 being drafted currently. Now, that doesn't mean all of them are going to come, but typically, you know, we see 450 to 500 bills. They're talking six plus at least. So we'll see, you know, how that all goes. Some people think they have a good idea and then decide not to bring it for whatever reason.
They pull it. Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned Sadaho casts a big net. I mean, you're talking about just about everybody that has anything to do with healthcare. you know, from short-term care to long-term care and everything in between. And you said these members pay dues. So I would assume that they, you know, they pay dues for the benefits of their organization that Sadaho takes care of them for them. And I know you work your tail off all year long, but especially out at session. So I would ask you today, as you see things right now, Tim, in terms of healthcare, what are some of the big issues that are going to come up in PIER this session?
Yeah, probably in no particular order, but maybe one of the more important ones is always Medicaid funding or Medicaid, you know, inflationary increase. And I want to thank the governor for proposing a 4% inflationary increase to Medicaid in her budget address in December. And so we were really, really excited as a group to see that number. That can change, obviously, as session evolves. Typically doesn't, or it's going to stay close to that, I would expect. You know, with kind of the downturn in the economy a little bit nationwide, we were a little bit concerned that might be in the 2% range. So pretty happy to see 4. We'll be working on that all session. That impacts pretty much every member that we have at some level. And so that's kind of a big one. We're really going to watch Medicaid expansion. I don't see a lot of stuff going on with it, but we're finally, people are enrolled. They started enrolling July 1st. And really, the numbers are coming in kind of what we thought they would be. I think we're on pace for, if you kind of look at the numbers, we're at about 15,000 enrollees. That doesn't mean people that have utilized it. That's been an interesting thing for me personally, because, you know, you're talking about covering folks from 18 to 65, because on either side of that, there's different programs for folks. Of course, 65 and older is Medicare, but... so these are low income individuals who have really no other options for healthcare coverage. It's not a welfare, you know, situation because they never see a dollar. My members would actually get reimbursed for the services they provide. So for example, in 2020, my members just on the hospital side wrote off $181 million of what we call bad debt. So just money you're not ever going to capture from any other source. And so really we're hoping, we know that Medicaid expansion will help drive that number down a little bit. And, you know, things are a little tough in the healthcare industry right now just because of payer mix and reimbursement from different sources. So we're again, looking, just kind of watching that. Okay. I think it's going to play out like we thought, so.
So we got people out there that are saying, how can we reach this Tim Rave guy? You know, he's taking healthcare to a new level, a new area. How do people talk to you?
Well, I don't know if it's fortunately or unfortunately, but if you Google Tim Rave, you're going to find a way to probably find my cell phone. So, no, if you Sadaho, you just reach the Sadaho office if you don't have my cell phone, and they know how to get a hold of me. So we're located at 50th and Louise, basically, on Brooks Place. And we have a great website. Our team has built just a fantastic website with lots of information and, of course, all of our contact information. So pretty easy to find if you type in S-D-A-H-O. So,
well, if you have healthcare concern questions, you know, there's a lot going on. And I know there was one discussion, Tim, about the potential of, you know, having to maybe consolidate long-term care facilities and, you know, kind of like they did with school system, whatever. So, but that hurts because people want it in their town. So you've got some delicate issues you're going to have to work through this year. I would make one final comment to Tim. Tim's son, Mitch, is the new VP of Public Policy for the Greater Sioux Falls Chamber of Commerce. Okay. So what's it like being up there? You've been up there with your son when he was at Sanford. Now he's at the Chamber. What's it like working with your kid every day?
Yeah, actually, it's a lot of fun. You know, we don't see each other, interestingly, that much during the day and you know, catch up maybe a little bit in the afternoon. But no, it's a lot of fun. I'm pretty lucky, pretty blessed to have that opportunity. And you know, he really has grown up in the Capitol. So is my daughter. When they were young, I think they were 6 and 8 when I got elected. And so they've really never known anything different than the Capitol. Totally different than me. First time I ever came to the Capitol, I think, was when I got elected. So
We appreciate
fun stuff.
We appreciate the work you're doing. And, you know, if you've got some updates, reach out to us. We'll get you on.
And on my regular medical show.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, on Bill's regular medical show, there's opportunities for to communicate to our audience. And Sioux Falls Day at the legislature will be live at the Capitol on the 21st of February. So, you know, if you're around, you know, you might have something to add. So anyway, Tim, thanks. Mitch is doing a great job for the chamber. We appreciate it. The Rave family, thanks for your work with Sadaho. And we'll be talking to you soon.
You bet. Thank you, guys. Anytime you want me on, I'll pop on. So.
Okay. Thanks, Tim.
How about that music? You know, I've got a question here for you, the Greater Sioux Falls Chamber. Where are we? What have you seen? Where are we going in 2024?
Well, I'll tell you right now with the Chamber of Commerce, just, you know, wearing my board chair hat, we're really looking now. We're digging into the legislative session. The Greater Sioux Falls Chamber of Commerce has always looked at to see where they're at on issues, pro, con. They want to know where we're at. And, you know, despite the fact that sometimes Sioux Falls has a little bit of a tough pull in the legislature, depending upon the issues, we will be studying those, you know, pipelines, other things, other big issues that are going to come up.
Healthcare.
We're going to have to weigh in on one side or the other. So, we're studying that right now, and we're really working on members' education and benefits for members. So, you know, we're going to keep pushing and want to get that membership up to 2,000 and businesses. And so we'll keep doing it. And thanks today to President USA Marie Griffiths, Brooke Hendricks. She's coming back.
Bonesy,
he's back. So anyway, thank you.
Our time's up. Thank you for yours.
Kello News Talk 1320 KELO Sioux Falls, FM 107.9 KELQ Flandreau Sioux Falls, and online at kello.com.